The Blazers have one of those really passionate fan bases, and sometimes, you know, you get the emotion of the moment. So, safe to say, let's go back to August 8th when Portland lost to the Clippers in the bubble. If every Trailblazer fan were presented a contract and said, on August 21st, you'll be in the playoffs, tied with the Lakers at one game apiece, everybody signing in blood, right?
Exactly, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, my theory was they're not even waiting for a pen. They're biting off the tip of their fingers. So
exactly.
While I think somebody brought up that, you know, it's not aggregate. This is like in golf. It's match play. It's one game apiece. And with how they were just, you know, tiptoeing on the edge of the cliff at times throughout the whole home stretch, I mean, you just got to be realistic and like where they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely being 1-1 in a situation where you easily could have been 2-0 is obviously advantageous, especially when you're the underdog. If they're down 2-0, then it's like, oh, yeah, they're done. As it stands now, they're still in it to win it. I think, though, that there has to be some major concern as to how these two games have played out, given how poorly Portland's offense has been, and a lot of that credit goes to the Blazers. Even in the first game, aside from the first quarter, the Lakers did a great job on the Blazers. Blazers scored 36 in the first quarter and finished with 100. So they scored 74 the rest of the way. But they got hot in that last 5 minutes of the game, hit those threes to pretty much pull away from a team that couldn't buy a shot all night, really, right? The Lakers were horrible. So you look at that game and say, okay, they made 5 3-pointers. The Lakers did 32. Even 10 of 32 would be mediocre. 5 more threes would be 15 points. Of course, you have to factor in some of the misses that were then scooped up, and maybe there was a put back by Davis or something. So the math doesn't work exactly like that. But still, moving forward, you know, there's no way you can believe that the Lakers are going to shoot that poorly again, and of course they didn't. So then the question was, could the Lakers get their offense going to the same levels it was at during play-in sessions? And they come close, regressed. So that's the concern. Is it Portland not getting it done against the Lakers, or is the Lakers' defense cramping down? I'm on the side of the latter, and I wrote an article heading into that game, you know, basically asking that question. And I think there were signs in that first game that this team is just too big and athletic, especially on the perimeter, and they're big enough to match up with the Blazers' big inside. That's just trouble for them. And the way they're throwing guys at Lillard to try and take him out of his rhythm is working, and they're not really talented enough, I don't believe, to compensate for not having Lillard go off.
So living in Portland and knowing the city like few others, when Lillard got hurt late in the third, any truth to the rumor that Mayor Wheeler had all entrances to the Hawthorne, Morrison, and Burnside bridges blocked off? Because let's face it, if we woke up this morning and somebody said, surgery, Lillard's done, that's your city would be in mourning right now.
Oh, yeah, even more so than it is just in general these days, right? all the chaos going on here. But, yeah, especially, you know, when it happened and how it happened. I mean, they were pretty much out of it late in the third quarter. Stotts was even asked about that. Why was he in that late in the blowout? And his answer, I thought, was legit. He was playing basketball. Like, you know, if you're the Blazers, you feel like you're a 14-0 run away from getting back into anything. But still, you know, to have it happen that late in the quarter with that type of lead would add insult to injury. But it was bizarre. Like, when he reached in and it came up hurt, I was like, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell until they showed some motion and it looked like maybe he hit the back of Davis's foot. But at the moment it happened, I did not feel like he broke anything. Like, I felt like he just jammed it. Plus, if he had broke it, he would have been like freaking out, probably, as opposed to how he reacted. So, now, fortunate for them, he's fine. He's going to wear splints. Stotts just said earlier today, undergoing rehab, he's definitely going to play. We'll see how that splint impacts his ball handling. But, you know, I don't know, dude. I never believed the Blazers were going to win this series. I didn't believe it after the game one, and I definitely don't believe it now.
You mentioned the post game last night, and I was watching on NBC Sports Northwest, and I think he asked the question right before you, why was Lillard in there that late in the third, down 30? And I think it was Brian Noe said, if you only asked after, then you're kind of second guessing. I've always been a big believer in, you know, all those years when the Ducks would win by 100 points, people would be like, why is so-and-so in? And it's like, well, players play. It was still the third quarter. What was your take on that whole situation?
At the time when he got injured, I don't think they were quite down 30 yet, were they?
It was in the neighborhood, but there's still like 3 minutes left.
Yeah. I didn't think it was strange that he was in. I mean, I when you start pulling dudes, you're waving the white flag, obviously, and it's basketball. Like, it always trips me out when people talk about, oh, these guys are playing too many games, and they're worn out, and blah, blah, blah. And then you cut to videos of in the summer playing.
Right.
It's like, this is what they do. They're basketball players. They're supreme athletes. They're not out, you know, doing something that's really detrimental to your body. Think about all the minutes basketball players play in their life. It's like, it's just what you do. So to say he should have been out for those last 3 or 4 minutes of the quarter, just to prevent injury, like, wait, what? In basketball? So and the person asking the question I've worked with, and we've had these discussions before, and his opinion is, when something about a reach, you just take people out, and mine is, it just depends, because how do great comebacks happen?
Yep.
Great comebacks happen because you keep playing.
And
if everyone took their guys out down 25, we would never have 25-point comebacks, and we've had them, or at least have games become close after that. So, I just see why he kept them in. Now, he cleared the bench going into the fourth. Was that because Lillard got hurt or because they were down 30? I think probably because they were down 30 and knew they weren't going to come back from that. But, I didn't have a problem with him still being in the game at that point.
Yeah, me either. Players play. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. I had Lamar Hurd on this week, and we were talking about C.J. McCollum. I think a lot of people forget that, he was a 10th overall pick. He's now averaged over 25 years in a row. And the thing I like about him is, he gets it's Lillard's team, but safe to say he also understands at times, depending on the matchup, he needs to shoulder the burden and take the big shot because he's a really good clutch player.
Yeah, he's fascinating to watch find his shot, the different ways he can try to get his shot. And there was a play in the game where he started to step back, then he went left, then he cut into the lane. And I was kind of like, why is he going in there? And then he floated up awkwardly, twisted his body, and just lofted it, up over the, I think it was Caruso was on him, just lofted it up over him into the basket. And I was like, that was creative, just the way he made that happen. He's just such a good scorer. But the problem for them is that that's pretty much what he is, and he's doing that at 6'2", 6'2", 6'3", right?
Right.
So he's not giving you a ton on defense. And I was just talking to someone else about this today. I think it was my oldest son. We were talking about just, the give and take between these two teams. And if the Lakers take away Lillard and say, okay, CJ and Carmelo beat us, and the Blazers take away Davis and says, okay, Kentavious, Caldwell-Pope, and LeBron beat us, I'm taking LeBron and Pope because those guys are going to be one-on-one, and LeBron one-on-one with anybody is going to score more times than McCollum and Anthony are. So, even though McCollum can make some plays and look nice doing it, over the course of 48 minutes, over the course of 7 games, LeBron is winning that every time. If you take away LeBron and now Davis is one-on-one, Davis is winning that every time over the course of just the amount of opportunities everyone gets. And that's the problem for Portland. They're not armed with enough legit weapons. And Carmelo, God bless him, it's a great story. He's what, 3-for-16 in this series so far? He's made some great shots, but he has not been playing as well as people are trying to make it out to be. Like, he's been clutch at moments, but he's also had some bad games, and right now he's not playing bad at all. So they do not have the firepower to survive with Lillard being taken out of the game, and CJ's limitations as a scoring two guard who's 6'2" is part of the problem.
A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian. Another NBA thought. With how the college season ended, it's like I forgot a bunch of it. And coming across, who are the franchise changers? So I know your Bulls got the 4th overall pick. So you had to go do some research, Steve, and figure out who the hell you might want them to pick?
Yeah, so I'm sitting there watching the lottery. I forgot the lottery was even on. But I accidentally come across it. I'm like, oh, the lottery, right when they started it. And I was like, wait, where's the Bulls? I started looking at the standings again. I'm like, oh, the Bulls probably like 8 is a normal slot. Or 7. Let's see what happens. And then all of a sudden they go, the Bulls have jumped in the top 4. And then I got really interested. And then I was like Googling mock drafts. Because I have other than LaMelo Ball, I have no clue who would be the top pick, literally. It's not like this is a Zion year, right? Or even, in the same draft. So I started looking these guys up, and I just started finding all these names that people I know nothing about. So there's Jameis Wiseman, center from Memphis. I watched his highlight video. I like him. I haven't watched Anthony Edwards because he's projected to go 1 or 2 by almost everybody. And then I watched this Obi Toppin guy from Dayton. That guy's good. He reminds me of Jason Tatum or Kawhi Leonard. I want that guy, but a lot of people have him going 1. So, yeah, it was fun. No clue. And that's what I think about LaMelo Ball. Wait a minute. That means LaVar Ball's in Chicago. I can't have that. He would drive me bananas if he ever said anything. So, yeah, it's kind of cool that they ended up in the top 4, but now I have to do some studying so I can at least have some idea of who they might be taking.
Yeah, thank God for Google. one general question. So earlier this week, the Padres had this kid, Fernando Tatis. So they're up 7. He gets the take sign. He ignores it, hits a grand slam home run. The manager's going nuts. A pitcher throws at a hitter. And I mentioned it early. Stuff like that, or football teams who roll up the score. I'm always about, well, you could get the guy out or make a stop. What's your take on these, I guess, codes or unwritten rules?
So did he ignore the sign or miss it?
I think he missed it.
He missed it, okay. I'm not a baseball guy. I think I played 1 year of Little League or something. Got hit in the jaw with the ball, and I'm done. It's like, I'm gonna go do something safe.
Safe like football.
Exactly. I'm gonna have a helmet when I get hit, right? Well, can I wear a helmet in the batter's box? No, coach. Okay, I'm out of here. But so I kind of feel weird saying this because it's not my culture. I was raised in it, but as someone who has watched baseball forever and watched sports, I've been done with these unwritten rules since forever. I think the one when they jumped the shark for me was when dude bunted to break a no hitter in the 8th. Was it the 8th inning or something like that?
Yep.
And it was a close game.
3 runs.
Yes. He bunted to get on and people were freaking out. And I was like, wait a minute. We're saying now that he's supposed to say, oh, I could bunt and get on in this close game, but no, I'm a hit and get on like a man because this guy's got a no hitter. What are you talking about? And now this one, this I think is more egregious because you are up a lot. But they're up 7 runs, right? 10-3 when you hit it.
Yep.
I've seen teams blow 7-run leads. I've seen my Cubs is 2 weeks ago. My son and I are like, yeah, they're up 8-2. Next thing you knew, it was 8-7. We're like, holy crap. So to me, you just keep playing. And then they get mad and throw at another guy. Like, baseball just does so many little corny little things to me. Like, oh, since that dude hit a grand slam, I'm going to hit your friend. Like, what?
Yeah.
So, anyway, needless to say, just totally corny. Get the guy out. How do you have bases loaded? If you're down 7, how are you walking guys to put people on anyway?
No, I agree. My thought has always been, so you're a professional, he's a professional, he did his job better than you, so you're mad at him?
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Like, if this is a little later high school, then maybe you could say, oh, you don't want to hurt the kid's feelings. But these are grown adults making millions of dollars. Like, okay, by him hitting that grand slam, did you not get paid that week? Then shut the hell up. It just doesn't make sense to me. I wasn't raised in that culture, so I can't, maybe I just don't understand.
No, I think you're spot on, and I was raised in it, and I'm even older than you. So there you go. All right, folks, he's Aaron Fentress on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress, back with the Oregonian. I'm on vacation next week, so we'll chat in a couple weeks. You be well, be safe, and enjoy the rest of the Blazers-Lakers, and I always appreciate your time. Have a good one.
All right, man, take care. Have fun on your vacation.
Thanks. Have a good one.